Welcome, Rain fans, to the AfterBuzz TV After Show for Rain Season 4, Episode 3. We have special guest Will Kemp in studio, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Even though the show doesn't give you this theme song, we do here on the After Show. That's a reason to tune in. Another reason is we have our great co-host, Alina Vision.
Hey, what's up, guys? You can follow me on all social media at Alina Vision, and then that's Vision with two S's.
And as promised, we brought him in, very special guest, Will Kemp, who plays Lord Darnley. Welcome,
Hello,
Will.
Good evening. Thank you.
He trekked out here even on Oscar night.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to race back to catch it. But you guys can catch me at I Am Will Kemp on Twitter and Instagram. I'd love to hear your thoughts about the show.
Well, we're going to get it. Let's start overall. Let's start in France. A lot going on in France. We have Narcisse. We have the reunion between Narcisse and Catherine.
Yay!
So amazing. They are just... Their chemistry together couldn't be better.
I've still been looking forward to this completely. I love seeing them together, them being their awesomeness selves. I think we got some good things coming up with them, as we could see.
Absolutely. And you know, what is it like? How are they like in real life? What Megan?
They actually do get on incredibly well. They are certainly the... One would say the more mature of the cast. They have a great rapport on and off screen. They're both intelligent. They're both very, very good. And I think they actually really thrive working together. You can actually see that they feed very well off each other and the characters they play. There's always a sense of something untoward is about to happen. Whenever they're in the room together, you feel a plot is happening, which is fantastic to watch.
Right.
Keeps you entertained.
Oh, there's a lot of plots today. We going after the position where the Cardinal's kind of stepping in, taking Narcisse's position, and then we have to figure out what's going on with Charles, and the best way is to get him a girl.
Absolutely, that solves most problems. Let's be honest.
Exactly.
Particularly at that age, for a
teenage
guy.
Boy, absolutely.
Yeah. And whose idea was it?
Narcisse.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who knows what's up?
Well, let's talk about that because. You know, one of the things we just kind of talked about off air really fast was the fact that Rain is going a little bit darker, and certainly
definitely, and we've sort of kicked off in that vein. I feel this time around,
and especially with Charles, that's sort of in that vein. And you would think, like, you know, something like, okay, give him a girl, that'll solve it. But it doesn't seem he just wants to talk about death.
Yeah, completely. And bless her. Ooh, what's she got in store for her?
That is, out of all, you know, it's almost funny because just kind of seeing the reactions, obviously the Darnley storyline is so huge, and yet this almost kind of gets forgotten, even though it's like, wait, this is a huge thing. What happens with a girl?
Right.
Yeah. Alina, what are your thoughts? What's happening?
You know, I don't even know. I thought it was going to take her to go see people die, but then she just never comes back.
Mm.
It's like, where is she? And he has one shoe, and he's super emo. What's going on?
You know? I know, right?
And
that's what the show does really well with each character. It's such a web that you can follow each person in each country. And they have their own individual relationships, problems, and stories that are fascinating. That you only have time to see a smidgen of each person, but that's what the show does so well. Is it keeps you coming back to know and to find out what's happening with each person in each country, each relationship.
Absolutely.
Right.
And what's interesting for me too, one of the reasons why I am fascinated by him is because he is so. Even though he talks about Francis and he makes mention of that. He's very different from Francis completely, you know, and they were both young kings, and just the way they're dealing with everything just couldn't be more opposite.
Yeah.
So I love seeing that.
And that's what I think it was in history, and that's what creates great drama is the conflict and the difference with which people handle power and their position at court.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's interesting. Right. If it was the same all the time, we've seen this before.
Absolutely. So a great big mystery left there. I think she's. If I had to predict anything, she's dead.
Yeah, you think?
I think so.
I don't know. It just seems so bizarre to me. I was like, maybe he's into some bondage stuff now.
I think that was you. I think you were projecting.
I don't know what happened to her,
But also what's great, what Spencer brings to that character is that you believe anything. He's capable, and you've seen him do so much that it is a real mystery. It is very unpredictable, and he's fantastic at that. Because you really are watching a young king struggling, and he's definitely, I can't tell you, but he's definitely going off a cliff at some point. Mm-hmm. It gets ugly.
Oh, can't wait to see this.
Well, typically I would say Narcissa's advice is really good, but for the girl, this time around, like, whatever the king likes. And then she just kept repeating, whatever the king likes.
That's definitely the mantra of. But it's just a pawn, isn't it? It's a pawn in a game of kings. And it's particularly Narcisse-like to find these little sort of chess games and to bring in people that are disposable to him. Mm-hmm. And Craig does that so well, because you just love to watch him, love to hate him almost. But you're intrigued because you know that it's going to be juicy.
I agree, but I don't think he had it in his mind. Like, again, if my theory is correct, Narcisse didn't intend for her to die. He just intended for he's just going to sleep with her, and that's it.
And that's it, yeah.
It appears to me, and again, this is what the writers of Rain get so right, is that they bring in fictional characters and weave them brilliantly into very strong characters that are very well depicted in history. And you often can't tell which is which. And with Narcisse, he's a good propeller. He sets things in motion. Often it doesn't end as planned, but then he'll use that to set something else off. And it's this great way to keep a historical sort of platform or tale going with a fictional character that's just constantly bringing in these sort of troublesome or playful ideas. Yeah. Situations.
Absolutely. We got a comment in the chat room.
Oh, so comment already.
Ali Cat Diva said, I thought Charles had the same problem as Henry because... Didn't Henry run around barefoot all the time near the end?
Didn't he?
This is true. However, I'd love to pull up the full comment. I think from the episode 2, or perhaps it was episode 1, in the comment section, someone wrote that it's slightly different from Henry, and it was basically an essay on why it was different.
Uh-huh, right.
So I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I have no idea.
But there are definitely trends of that time. I mean, the illness is that people died from the same stuff all the time. People sort of went down the same routes a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean? There is definitely a sort of thread that. No. People do repeat the certain type of, I don't know if it's a madness or an illness.
Right. Absolutely. And we're also coming off of the heels of the Black Plague, remember? Because we saw so there's still got to be some lingering effects.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But let's switch gears and talk about I want to talk about the Cardinal first. Mm-hmm. Because that was such a... I want you to know your opinion. Like, how did this come about? Claude is this... she is so saintly. She is the savior.
All of a sudden... Claude is the saint. I thought it was great writing, actually. The fact that, you know, Catherine goes and poisons this guy hoping he'll die and doesn't. He just goes blind. And then Claude is the one whose tears save him. And now she's a saint, which is just, if you know her character, which he didn't know, it's just hilarious to think of Claude as a saint.
Yeah.
So what do you think about it?
I love that. I mean, I love how he's sort of blinded by this, and she now she's just going along with the plan, and she tells him, "Hey, you're more useful in Spain. Mm-hmm. You should go back to Spain." And so obviously he does, but that triggers Lisa. I want to know more about Lisa because they are it's a family dynamic, and it's the first time that Catherine said, like, "Listen, I may appear to be a bad parent, but in Lisa's case, I was pretty bad." What does that mean?
True.
What fascinates me and what Megan gets so right is this sort of mother, this protective mother. She's always had, and I think even with Francis, there was this, you know, real driven mother protecting her sort of cubs, but also using them. So the minute that one of her daughters appears to be an angel, she finds a way to make that work. Mm. But Lisa does cause her a problem, which is pretty evident. She's come in and she has shaken things up. For her, and it's very interesting to watch Catherine, who I think's a fascinating character anyway, but to see Megan particularly portraying it into at what point does she not take care of her children, at what point does she really rile up against them, and it's at the point where they challenge her power, right, and threaten her.
Yeah. Well, I like, as we mentioned, I like her now having Narcisse because she can sort of trade ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah.
However, going back to Charles, you know, the one thing that she needs is she might not necessarily agree with Charles's decisions, but she just needs him to make a decision.
Yes.
So he appears strong.
Well, completely, because he is king, and for her it's paramount that he's doing, in her eyes, I believe, the right thing, and it is a strong, powerful son, and she like is the puppeteer, but ultimately he's the king, so she has a power up to a point, but as as her son, she needs him to be a good son and a great king in order for her to sort of weave her way.
Yeah, and she doesn't have the power of regent anymore, so that obviously hurts it. So I like where this is going. I'm always fascinated by this. It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I can guarantee that it gets more fun.
It gets more juicy.
Spence is great. He's like I keep saying, he brings a lot to that.
He does.
Yeah. They wrote him some good stuff. I can't tell you, but he's got some good stuff coming up.
Absolutely, and as I predicted, I did predict that Narcisse would come back, no days off. He just comes right in. He's like, okay, what do we got to fix around here?
Exactly. How do you get there so quick? That's the thing. Do you notice that? It's brilliant. So time travel. It takes him an hour to get from from England to Scotland.
Maybe they had a bit of wind on their side.
A lot of wind. Yeah.
I can imagine Narcisse just huffing and puffing into it himself. All right, I got to get back home.
Got stuff to do.
Yeah, so I can imagine that. But let's switch gears and go all the way to England. Not necessarily a lot in England in terms of time spent. However, major developments that ensue, especially with Gideon and Elizabeth. Mm. And Elizabeth really kicks off what then perspires in Scotland and with your character and everything like that. But Alina, you as the resident female, this hatred, this, I don't
represent.
I mean, can there ever be peace between the two?
I want there to be peace between the two, but obviously we know through history that just never happens. I think, and I've talked about this before on the show, because they're just women in power, especially monarchs, and there's always somebody gunning for their power. And, you know, Mary has kind of a right to the English throne as well. Mm. I just don't think they can ever, no matter what Gideon tries to say, I just don't see it happening. I would love for it to, because I'm all about women power. Like, hey, you know, you two, exactly.
So am I. I think a lot of the world would be a better place.
Exactly. But what was your initial reaction when you heard Gideon's plan to Elizabeth and saying, okay, this could achieve peace?
Right.
And she's like, okay, you know what, try it.
I was all for it, but at the same time, when she said, you know, I'll give you guys Kent, the castle in Kent, there was an inkling in me that something was up. Because I know from reading history about what happens later on. But when it came out, it's just, of course Mary wasn't going to go that way. She's just not. Mm. It just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, and you as Darnley, you've had, you know, in at least what we've already seen, you had the chance to interact with both Elizabeth and Mary. So what's Elizabeth, in terms of her character, like to interact with?
Oh, she was great fun. That was the very first scene that I did was with Rachel. It was with the director, Stuart Gilliard, who I'd actually worked with on 90210, actually. So it was actually nice walking onto this set. Of course, it's always nerve-wracking. It's always first day at school type thing. But actually, Rachel was fantastic and was immediately fun. And sort of, she popped my rain cherry, as it were, and it was a very pleasant experience.
I'm glad. Yeah, they seem very welcoming of newcomers.
So yeah, completely. These guys have been on the show for a long time. The sort of core that were there even from season one, and I know Rachel joined in season two, I believe.
They've been
on this, and it's a tough, grueling schedule. And I think the gap in between these two series shooting was not as long as it had been previously, so they sort of had a turnaround and came straight back up to Toronto, and they just wrapped when it was freezing cold, like they couldn't speak, it was so cold. on locations. And yeah, it is always a thing when you're joining something like this, and actually what's great is that people will get to see that Darnley does become a very integral part of this. I mean everything. It sort of grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. But it is like jumping on a moving train, and you just, at the beginning, you just want to keep that train running because it works and everybody knows what they're doing. They know their characters so well, and you jump in having done all the work and the research you have, but you come in still trying to find your place in this show. And it's always tricky, challenging, but actually these guys are incredibly generous, and I think new blood is always good, and I think that if you've been kind of on a show for a long time, you do relish the new blood coming in and challenging. That's what acting is. You come in and say, right, bring it. Mm-hmm. And so I was lucky to play this very well written character, very, very clear from the history books, really, who this guy was and what he did. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to be the fox among the pigeons, as it were, or the chickens, to come in and just throw everything out. And I think they love that.
Well, last week we talked about the similarities between Elizabeth and Mary. And as I think about it more, I want to get you guys' perspective on this, that Elizabeth to me seems very more rigid and always operates from a place of anger, where even though Mary sometimes has to make a harsh decision, it comes from a more human side, I would say. And I don't know if you disagree with me, you know, by all means, but what's your take on that?
Very interesting. That's an interesting way of looking at things. I see some humanity too, though, in Elizabeth. I get what you're saying, but I do see some you see those glimmers of, you know, when she's making a decision, she does think through things, but ultimately, I think it always comes back to her power and keeping her power. And yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is very interesting because you've got Elizabeth, who she's sort of clawing on to keep power. Mm-hmm. Her whole thing is, I've got it, how do I keep it? And at what lengths will I go to make sure that I'm the only one in power ever? And you've got Mary, who's sort of this reluctant, she didn't want to be there. She's the sort of victim of history almost. Mm-hmm. And is caused upon to be proactive, whereas Elizabeth is constantly trying to keep hold of everything. I think that Mary finds herself having to make these choices, and you get the impression from our show that she has a real strong conscience sort of side. She's very conscientious of her people. There's a nobility, which I think Adelaide captures beautifully in this, in that it's that you sort of follow her struggle with doing the right thing. She has a very strong moral sort of viewpoint, whereas I think Elizabeth can be almost pushed into a corner so much, into a panic, that she then does drastic things.
Right.
Which, what will be interesting is when you see Mary perhaps pushed into a corner, what will happen then?
All right.
Very true.
I'll leave you with that.
Just going to leave that right there.
All right, well, let's move to Mary's side. And before we sort of dive in with her, I want to get your guys' thoughts on the developing relationship between James and Mrs. Knox. You know, I think James is now starting to take to it even though he was reluctant. I think the reluctance has gone away. I'll put it that way. Perhaps.
I agree. You see a little twinkle in his eye when he's looking at her for some reason. I mean, when he's around other people, especially Greer, when, you know, she came up to him, he made it sound like, oh, it was no big deal. But yeah, he's taken a liking to her.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you can read anything into anything, but it is interesting. You could potentially read into what we just saw, Greer looking at James looking at Emily. You got this weird sort of, and it'll be interesting again to see how that plays out.
Oh, the fans are all about Greer and James.
Yeah,
wow. They desperately want that.
I mean, who knows?
It could happen.
Yeah, keep watching. They're all good looking though. I mean, I I pretty watch Eva and every one of them. I don't mind.
Yeah. all of you guys on the show. Actually, we have
the girls
a comment.
Are phenomenal. Oh, a comment.
We have a comment.
Here we are.
So, who's commenting? Rain Brazil.
Oh,
says,
hello,
I was
Brazil. We like
shocked
Brazil.
Shocked to see that Darnley had feelings. I was expecting a 100% evil character.
That's very interesting because the research that I did historically, he wasn't very liked. There's a lot of letters which have come up that are in print and people didn't like him. And in one of my first conversations with the creator, Laura McCarthy, was she didn't want that, and which is obvious. You don't want to just see an evil character. And I actually don't believe that anyone is fundamentally purely evil. There's always a reason, and the challenge playing this type of role is finding a point of view of why you do things, why, what propels, what motivates. And what the writers, again, geniusly came up with, and Laurie did, was brought me Kira. So I'm actually in love with Kira as my true love. And that's a total fictional sort of character. And it was a gift. It was as the season progresses, you'll see that it plays a huge part into understanding why Darnley does what he does and is actually ultimately very noble and a man of his word, even if you might not agree or like what his actions are and what he does.
Well, it's one of the interesting things, you know, I'm sure Darnley couldn't have known it, but in terms of if there is a connection between Elizabeth and him, it's the fact that they both really love somebody that they just couldn't have.
Definitely, yeah, yes, yeah. That's and that's again is much more interesting to watch and is much more human and much more actually realistic. People go to extraordinary lengths when they're spurned by love or not allowed to pursue something that they need and want to pursue, or particularly in love. I mean, a broken heart can, you know, make you do all sorts of crazy things.
It can indeed.
Right, Phil? I know you've been there.
I think we've all been in love. We've all suffered.
We're all nodding here. Yeah. We're all nodding here.
I mean, speaking of all people, like Gideon, my God, he really wanted this to go forward.
Yeah, and what an effort. The sets on this episode in that lake,
when
they row over, wasn't that just absolutely gorgeous. Spellbinding? And Ben, bless him, charming. Oh, he's such a lovely man, a great actor, and just you could see rowing when he was rowing. He knew what was there, and you could see it in his eyes.
Yeah, he could.
Right, and then you saw it in her face.
Yeah.
That, and it's beautiful. I mean.
I just melted. It
must have taken
him
ages, don't you think so, to build that thing?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, who put this together?
Right, again, very quick, very, right? There wasn't much time.
Well, he must have a lot of Scottish friends. Yeah.
He's talented. That Gideon, wow. You give him a few branches and a floating pillow and, yeah.
Yeah.
Some twinkle lights.
But poor him. I mean, he was really deceived by... He wanted this so bad. Yeah. He was deceived by Elizabeth, so, you know.
So I'd ask, because I know, but I'll ask, which is an interesting thing, did anybody feel that he was genuinely wanting to persuade Elizabeth to allow him to marry Mary because he loved Mary, or was there a sense of loyalty still to Elizabeth by doing her a favor?
You want to start?
Right?
I'll start.
I mean,
yeah, I get what you're
because
saying.
Because that's an interesting...
I think from my perspective, I looked at it as he was really in love with Mary still.
Right, and was asking her to do him a favor, but
exactly,
spinning it that it would save her as
right,
well.
Right, like killing two birds with one stone,
yeah,
in
right.
a way.
Yeah.
Still that's being like, I'm a countryman, and I, you know, it's country over Mary, but I love her, but this will work out for both of you.
Right.
You know, because she's leaving her throne, which is what you want.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I get to marry her, and you're still in power.
Yeah, he's always been... He's shown, at least in what we've seen, that he's always country first, despite
right.
his feelings for Mary. And to Alina's point, yeah, it's very much, okay, this just happens to kill two birds with one stone, so let's go for it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that he thought that this would save Mary.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But she has that great line, I wish I hadn't written it down, but where she says, you know, I'd rather... I'd rather do something meaningful in the time that I'm here than just...
Oh, yes, yeah, right. It's mm-hmm. it's not what you do after you've gone, it's what you do when you're here type thing, right. isn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
It's what you'll be remembered
yeah.
for. Is that the one you're doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Paraphrasing horribly.
But she makes the decision to go with Darnley. Lady Lennox convinces her. So... And this is, I'm excited. We've gotten hints of you, but now this is, I imagine now this is going to be it.
Yeah, no, it's been a great build up. It's interesting. Their relationship is very complex. It's one of political gain, which is obvious. But I would leave on the table. It again would be interesting to see if in there is actual passion and actually real love. Is there a chance where there's sort of political sort of relationships in place where that has room, which actually lots of people have commented, is there room for true love in a political
relationship? Well, we saw it with Francis.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So.
But over a long period of time. And they did that. I mean, I actually, when I watched before I was on, I loved the way that... Toby and Adelaide, they captured a real kind of innocence, and that was also very interesting for me coming in with a different character, knowing I was historically going to be her next husband. The relationship's very, very different, and it needs, as we've talked, it's great to see a different king do things differently. Mm-hmm. And all I can say is that it's a relationship that's very, very different to the Francis Mary, and I think that what Toby and Adelaide captured was very, very magical and very sort of naive, actually, which is beautiful. This is not like that.
Well, it does beg the couple of questions. I mean, when, you know, there's the dark secret from Lady Lennox, and so, you know, when does he find that out? Does he ever find that out?
Yeah.
And does Mary sort of get roped into that just by association?
What is coming up for Darnley is, again, the alliance with Mother. At what point, as a lot of other characters, what point do you turn your back on your sort of namesake, on your family name? At what point do you say enough is enough? And often that's around when you're in love, because it's a big groundbreaking experience, and it's a very passionate emotion, right? And what's going to be interesting is does Darnley's alliance still stay with Mother, because she's ultimately his mother and he is a bit of a mummy's boy, which you will see, or does it spurn him to go against everything and be determined to not be as ambitious as his parents actually were, and particularly his mother, played by Nola in this, who's a lot of fun as well.
We got a question in the chat room. This is from Allison Wilson. She says, so does this mean Allison Darnley won't be evil to Mary like history indicates?
Won't. Well, again, we've got 16 episodes. So if it's just one or other, then it's going to be boring. There's a fantastic mix. It's a big roller coaster ride. I'm actually thrilled for people and fans of the show to get to watch this play out, because it's a bit of everything. It's really good, juicy stuff.
Well, you know, I guess let's spin it this way, right? One of the things we also talked about right before we went on air was the fact that because of the production schedule, you were only really able to focus on your role.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And where I'm going with this is the fact that, you know, right now, Darnley, his only vision of Mary, he's been told that Mary wants to meet Darnley and whatnot, and he sees her with Gideon, and he sees essentially him and Kira, and he's like, she doesn't want me.
Yeah.
And so now, if he's going to come back into this,
exactly,
the door's been closed.
Exactly, and he's done what Mother wanted, and it happened, and it's like, you're wrong. yeah, well done. There you go, Mother. I did what you asked.
Right.
Goodbye. I'm going back to my... it's quite possible that he actually, at this point, didn't want to be king, or that was all his mother and his parents. He just wants Kira. He wants to lay low. He has no aspirations, possibly, at this point, for anything other than just living a nice, lovely life, couple of kids in the countryside. Who knows?
And sort of shifting gears, because I think overall we've concluded the episode. If not, by all means, ask questions of the people in the chat. But in terms of Rain, you know, what was the? How did you sort of get involved? And you know, you said you had mentioned that you were watching the episodes a little bit before then. And so, can you sort of tell us about the process?
Obviously. You do a lot of research when you know there's a possibility that you're going to join a show. I was fortunate enough to have worked with four of the writers on the show before. I'd shot pilots for them. So there was a little bit of knowledge of me going in and also of the people that were going to be creating this character. But it is... there's a point where scripts come in very late, and we would have a table read of every episode. Often we'd walk into that room. Some people would come in their costume because they're still shooting the last one for the first time, read an episode. And it's difficult for everyone to keep abreast of all the characters, their relationships, all the countries. There's a point where you just have to take care of your own relationships, your own character, and... There was definitely a point where I couldn't and didn't need to keep abreast of everything and let everyone else do their thing, and you literally just had to come into it from your own character's point of view, because that's ultimately all that's really your job, and that you trust that everyone else will bring the best work that they can. And then obviously when you watch it, you're like, oh my God, of course, that's what they were doing while I was in Scotland or England doing this. That was happening in France. Oh, they did a great job. No. But it is, we all just sort of hunkered down and had to get on with our own stuff.
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite episode?
That's a good question. It was always a joy when writers, again, that I'd worked with in the past came, their names were on the episode. That was always a thrill. And I loved, it was two episodes that were directed by Megan, and that was actually the only time I actually got to work with her, was as a director. And her first episode's coming up, actually. I think it's four or five or six, maybe. I can't remember. But those were particularly wonderful. Again, because it was the only chance that I'd actually got to work with her. And there's one episode which I loved, which I can't say too much about, but I can say one word, and that's boxing. Mm-hmm. Coming from a show I was on, Girlfriend's Guide, where I was playing a baker, I would use a lot of props. I was used coming in to having a lot of action, a lot of doing stuff, a lot of props and stuff. And for me, the challenge was being comfortable walking into one of these, you know, amazing sets, wearing all these costumes, just walking into the middle of a room and talking for three pages and not actually physically doing anything. That was a real challenge. So the episode I'm talking about, where I say boxing, gave me a chance to do something physical to train for. And that's coming up, and I think that would be a great one too.
Well, a couple of follow up questions on that. You know, what is Megan like as a director? Like, what was the type of direction that she would give you? And
she's obviously a highly skilled and intelligent actor, and so you did feel that her priority was definitely with us as actors. She knows the show so well, having been in it and also directed last season, and there was an ultimate trust, and I think it was wonderful to watch her learn and develop as a director technically, because it is the same crew pretty much been the whole time through, and sort of how to watch her navigate, and you can almost see her thinking, if I was acting in this scene, what would I need? And just watching her sort of work out the technical side of it, which of course is the other side of any director, is knowing what lens, what angle, and how to tell a story, how to tell the whole story, not just of that particular scene or from her character's point of view.
Mm-hmm. Well, my other follow-up question was real quick. You know, because you've worked with some of these writers, do they... you know, do they have a sense of you, and do they write scenes specifically for you, knowing, like, playing to your strengths?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a kind of actor. I like to keep an open dialogue. I feel that I've now been doing this long enough. I'm old enough. I'm long in the tooth enough to actually take it on the chin. And actually, if you want to talk about something, let's talk about it. Equally, though, each script that comes in is like a puzzle, and it's deciphering. And it's, and that's part of the prep. That's part of the sort of Sherlock Holmesing through all these little clues that writers give you. Because that's a script is there to be written. Your job is then to interpret that and humanize it and work out what's the behavior, what am I doing, that sort of thing. But definitely, as we got going, I did see things in the script that I was thinking, oh, that's because they know I can do that, or I think I know exactly what they're referring to in this sort of the essence of what this is. And that would often be reaffirmed if we were able to talk or anything come in. I go, oh, I thought so. I thought that's what you wanted.
Okay. Alina, anything from the chat room for you?
Yeah, what's going on?
Chat room. There was a question about Megan.
They're all watching the Oscars. No. Yeah. Who's won? Can somebody comment?
We've won because we've got you on the show.
Look at that. There's a lot of love in this room. There's a lot of buzz love in this room.
Exactly. Well, we all know that, you know, Rain, this is the final season. So what have you got kind of going on? What can people expect to see you
on? For me? What do I have? I have a film coming out this year with Maggie Q called Slumber, which is an independent, which I shot before I joined Rain. That's coming out at some point. I was supposed to go to Toronto last year, but it wasn't completed in time. There may be a little bit more Girlfriends Going to Divorce. Hope so. I have a great time with that cast. Right now it's pilot season, so it's busy. That's busy, right. Busy. Yeah, we'll see. I don't have anything just yet to talk about apart from that movie with Maggie Q. Right. Slumber.
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
We'll try to keep you guys updated too. So if there's any development, we'll let you guys know at home.
Mm. Thank you.
Should we do Castle Corner?
Castle Corner. Yes.
All right. So Alina, you did this one. Usually I prepare it and you read it. This time you picked it you're reading it.
I went for a kind of fancy castle this time. You know.
Fancy.
Fancy. Oh, yes.
Fancy. Hello. It's all right. A big house.
So this is Glamis Castle, and I'm sure we're going to have the pictures up there. It's situated beside the village of Glamis in Angus, Scotland. It's the home of the Earl and Countess of Strathmore and Kinghorn, and is open to the public, which I thought was really cool. You can go there and see all this ornate furniture and whatnot.
Mm.
So, Glamis Castle has been the home of the Lane family since the 14th century, though the present building dates largely from the 17th century. Glamis was the childhood home of Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, wife of King George VI. Their second daughter, Princess Margaret, Countess of Snowdon, was also born there. Let's see, a castle fit for a queen by the time Queen Mary of Scots, that was another reason why I picked it, and her entourage visited Glamis in 1562. The east wing was dominated by the main tower, which had been added in about 1435. The castle was enclosed within a fortified court. Here's a little bit of a fun fact. There's a small chapel within the castle with seating for 46 people. The story given to visitors by the castle tour guide states that one seat in the chapel is always reserved for the quote-unquote white lady, which is supposedly a ghost which inhabits the castle, thought to be Janet Douglas, Lady Glamis. According to the guides, the chapel is still used regularly for family functions, but no one is allowed to sit in that seat.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a very good, it's a very pretty castle, although just from the location of it, it seems very secluded. Like, it's in the middle of just the woods.
Exactly. I mean, there's, you know, some roads that lead to it, kind of Downton Abbey-ish, gardens and all of that. But yeah, it seems like it's been restored since it's, obviously, since its opening, so.
Well, this is a strange question, but do you have a favorite castle?
Gosh, do I have a favorite castle?
I know it's the question everyone asks.
What surprised me a couple of years ago, I was living in Los Angeles and then was almost being a tourist going back home to London, is the Tower. The Tower of London is fascinating. Of course, Henry VIII. And I got to sit on his loo, which was interesting. but I, having sort of grown up in London, I hadn't ever been, and it's fascinating. And it's again restored, and it has it's sort of within the walls. There's houses where people still live, and it was one of the only places which was never bombed. So it really is probably, I think, one of the oldest sort of rows of these houses that almost like lean against each other, and you can they almost sort of move. But it's fascinating. I highly, highly recommend it. Tower of London.
Putting that on my list next time I'm in London.
See, it was a good question.
Yeah.
It's a great question.
All right, let's move into predictions for the next episode. Alina, you want to kick us off?
Oh, good. Oh.
Here we go. Predictions.
This is where things get crazy. Especially once we find out what Charles did.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I mean, Charles, he's so emo. He's going into his, like, goth phase, I feel like. I think we're going to figure out, what's going on with him. I don't know what it is. I think we've got a whole bunch of things that could be up in the air with him. I think Narcisse and Catherine, obviously, are going to just be two peas in a pod from now on. And... continue to poison people. I don't know. I don't really have too many predictions.
Well, I really think Narcisse is going to get to the bottom of Charles, and he's going to, in a way, slap him around and be like, hey, get out of this.
It's interesting because he almost needs a big brother sort of figure, doesn't he? Or like a father figure.
Yeah, I think Narcisse would be more father.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah.
Especially Henry, because Henry, he didn't seem like the nurturing type. Narcisse doesn't either. He just kind of tells you how it is.
Yeah, that is true. That is true, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. And then, I think next episode we're going to find out. The big thing is going to be how does Ken Darnley find out about the secret from the mother? We're going to see this develop in terms of him and Mary. But there's going to be that, when does it explode?
Yeah, you definitely get a sense there's a build-up happening, and there's a sort of a pressure cooker which is in place, and it's at what point does this get so much that it actually propels everything into a big action, which I think carries on through the rest of the series. It's just at what point does that happen and continue to happen.
Right, exactly.
And that's what's going to be fun for everyone. Keep watching.
And then, obviously that's exciting enough, but now Elizabeth, in a way, has to respond to what's happening because her plan went out the window, and so Mary's still a threat.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So she's got to
do something. That's historically, regularly, that's what's so fascinating. Apparently these two people never met, and yet the battles and it's such a dramatic fight across countries, and these two powerful women, one, like I say, fighting to keep her place, the other fighting to just stay alive and protect her honor and her people and do the right thing.
Absolutely. Well, that's about all the time we have for today. Thank you guys for joining us, as always. Please let us know your thoughts and opinions in the comments section. It's always so fun to read. Mm-hmm. Alina, where can the people find you?
The good people can find me on all social media at Alina Vision.
And me too, Twitter, Instagram. I am Will Kemp. I'd love you to follow me there. We'll be live tweeting the episodes, and keep watching. It's going to get more and more fun.
You heard it from Will himself. Thank you guys once again.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We'll be back for episode 4. Until next time, bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.